It's kind of difficult to know what to say about this hour of the show you're about to hear. This is the Ed Bush Talk Show. This hour of the show is taped. It's a reprise, and if you want to call it, of an interview I did with the activist Abby Hoffman. Abby Hoffman was very unpleasant. In fact, this is the maddest, frankly, I've ever gotten, ever, on the air in the public. You know, this is maybe the maddest I've ever gotten, period. But unfortunately, it happened on the air, but he was extremely rude and abusive off the air, and I became so angry with him, I decided to bring this on the air. So after the first break, he does a monologue, and then I kind of bring this out in the air. We end up almost shouting, and I was surprised he didn't walk out, and I'm surprised I didn't walk out, and I almost went over the table at him. So Abby Hoffman, I think you'll find interesting in this reprise. But it is about drug testing as well, and there is a concern, like if you take an Advil, you could test positive for marijuana use. So there's good information here as well. Listen, with me now is truly one of America's best-known activists. I mean, who better than Abby Hoffman? Who would be a peer of yours, Abby?
It's tough. Let's see. I have...
You've got to talk over here to this microphone.
Who's as good, you mean? Who's as modest?
Who's as good? Who's as good? I like that. Yeah, who's as good? Who's
Philadelphia Inquirer says I'm the best. But, of course, they see me in action every day.
Berrigan Brothers, maybe?
Yeah, but they don't do what I... the predecessor of what I do is a person named Saul Alinsky from the early 60s.
And what did he do?
I'm a community organizer. See, I'm right now... I mean, you don't know about that down in Texas, but the last 10 years I've been organizing communities against toxic waste dumpers and acid rain and the Army Corps of Engineers and now a utility company in Philadelphia and use all the methods of the 60s.
And getting arrested with Amy Carter, protesting the CIA on campus.
Yes.
And I said we ought to bring that up, and you said, sure, that's fine, but that was 4 arrests ago. What else you been arrested for recently?
I'm chaining myself to offenses of the Philadelphia Electric Company. See, in both these cases, the CIA and the Philadelphia Electric Company, of course, win if it ever goes to a jury.
Sure.
Because these are trespassing cases. And
you did
our
trespass.
Our point before the jury is that these were justified given the fact that the utility company or the CIA in the other case have gone outside the democratic process for decades, and the jury believes us. And goodbye. It's not like the old days in the 60s.
Who wins then? Before a jury, would you win?
Every time. Now
I saw a summary. I guess maybe not a summary. You represented yourself in this trial with Amy Carter on the question of the CIA recruiting.
Yes. In Harper's. They printed it next to Supreme Court Justice Marshall's.
I thought it was very compelling what you said.
I would think Texans... It's funny. I'm very popular in Texas. It used to not be. They used to just shoot and try to drive me out of town real quick.
Well, we're heard all over the country, so you're not really talking just to a Texas audience
here.
What do they think of you in Southern California, Abby?
They pick it there generally, Moonies and Scientologists. But, you know, what do we want from Southern California that they haven't already tried on the rest of us? After two presidents and Mickey Mouse and seedless oranges, I mean, I'm one that always cheers when the earthquake hits 7 on the Richter scale.
So what?
I shouldn't say it. I have a kid living there.
Well, now, why do you win in court against utility companies in 1987 when you wouldn't have in 1967?
Well, I win because on the county level, they're a little nervous about me. And, of course, I've learned a tremendous amount about law, having done this for 27 years. But
how many times arrested? How many times have you been arrested?
53.
Only 53?
Well, you know, a lot of that was in Mississippi and during the apartheid days in Georgia. So I got... You know, they just busted you for hanging around. I was arrested in Yazoo City, Mississippi, for going through a traffic light when they didn't have traffic lights. So they didn't list that in my civics course in college. See, I had quite an education.
Well, I meant that seriously. I'm surprised you weren't arrested more than 53 times. I mean, with all things you've been involved with.
It was one day I got arrested 5 times at the Pentagon, but it was just rapid ritualistic kind of arrests.
What was the roughest physical abuse arrest you ever went through?
Well, the roughest was my autobiography. I described the police had held me to the ground and beat me up and broke my nose in six places. And then Seymour Hersh, an investigative journalist who wrote The Price of Power about Nixon and Kissinger, uncovered a tape where Haldeman and Nixon talk about getting me and all the Chicago
you personally
and breaking my nose, and I sued him. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court put out an edict protecting him on civil as well as criminal charges, so I didn't get the house in New Jersey.
Bob
Haldeman. All this dialogue is in this book on urine testing. Now you're wondering how that dialogue got in, but that's poetic.
Well, I won't take you away from that, but I'm merely saying some of the former Nixon guys listen to this show, have called in or have been guests on this show.
Oh, so this is Haldeman and Nixon's own words.
Well, John Ehrlichman is living in New Mexico.
Santa Fe. When I was underground, I was a cook in his favorite restaurant. Actually,
did you see him then?
I think he was taken away to another place by the time I got to be a cook there. But I never mentioned it because they fired me unjustly. So I never mentioned the name of the restaurant, but he and I both know it.
Well, sometime we'll ask John Ehrlichman, or maybe he'll call in and tell us. Yes,
I'm a good cook.
Which moves this us over to your current fight about what's going on in America, a book called Steal This Urine Test. Not Steal This Book.
No, but a play on that, obviously.
Fighting Drug Hysteria in America.
Yes, I think this of nine books I've written, this is easily my bravest. And
why bravest?
No, well, because you're supposed to let sleeping drugs lie. These are two topics, excrements and drugs, which no one's supposed to be talking about in the 80s. And yet I think it's the most serious violation of our privacy in our lifetime. This very Snoopy test and somehow you wish the people that hate big government were there when you really needed it, when they're coming into your bladder.
What?
And by the way, this is not a book like my other books. There's no swearing in the book. There's not what you would call left rhetoric. It's a book dedicated to American workers. If they read it, they have a chance of keeping their jobs.
Why did you change the style for this book then?
Because I wanted policemen and pilots and firemen and mothers concerned about drugs with their kids to see a language that they could understand and read it. Because the one point I'm making is that 95% of what you see, especially on TV, here in the mass media, reading the papers about drugs, is not simply not true.
The effort to have drug testing, as you say, is wonderfully stated in its goals, to have a drug-free workplace for all, drug-free schools, public health protection, international cooperation, stronger enforcement, and expanded public awareness.
Well, those are government, but...
Right.
Well, you see, when
this
you...
This is all a crock, you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, you have to understand we're the most drugged culture in history. There's 300,000 drugs in the physician's desk reference. I don't think they're referring to those drugs. It's all these drugs that promise instant relief. To give you some idea of the statistics in this country, last year nicotine killed over 300,000 people, alcohol 120,000 to 150,000, legal drugs 8,000 to 10,000, and all the illegal drugs combined no more than 3,500. Those are the U.S. Government Bureau of Mortality statistics. So we're making a big hoopla, cheering 12-year-old kids that turn in their parents, you know, seeing politicians challenge each other.
No, wait a minute. The 300,000 people that died of smoking probably were at least, generally speaking, in their 40s or older. They've made a conscious, lifelong decision
yes,
to be a smoker.
Not really.
That's different than 11-year-old dying an overdose or a Len Bias for the first time.
Of course, I debated this issue with government officials at the University of Maryland, where he died and won 80% of the audience. Because half of the words that you used are not clinical words. I'm a trained clinical psychologist.
Well, good, then correct
me.
I'm Joe.
First, let me put in a little credentials, okay?
Good. All right.
I'm a trained clinical psychologist, trained by Abraham Maslow, who many think was America's greatest clinical psychologist. I practiced 3 years before I went south in the civil rights movement. For the last 6 years, I've been on the board of directors of a drug rehabilitation program in New York called Veritas. Out of 77 reviews in the printed media, not one has been bad, for one thing, and not one has called it a pro-drug book. So that's not what it is. But what I try to introduce is complex. Let me say this. First of all, with cigarettes, the general age of getting hooked on nicotine is below seven. Okay,
below seven.
Yes. It's a tougher drug to kick than heroin. Even the New York Times wrote a lengthy article about that, and I could point to several studies. The question of overdose is not now accepted as a clinical term. I can overdose you on applesauce, for example.
Yeah.
It doesn't say very much.
What did Bias die of?
We really don't know, actually, although we do know that the first reports that it was his first time use were inaccurate, that he'd been doing it for several times, and he had been freebasing, which is smoking the purest form of cocaine, which is the most dangerous, of course. And he probably had a bad heart. Or he could have had an allergenic reaction. I mean, I have a running mate. If you give her penicillin in 3 hours, she's going into a coma. I mean, basically what I say in the book is that all drug taking, legal or illegal, is a trade-off. There's very few free rides. There's always going to be side effects. And so you have to measure those side effects against the positive benefits. And instead of looking at the substance itself, which the media does continuously, we should really be looking at the individuals and their relationship to the substance.
For
and of course,
instance,
the,
that,
the
what
test...
Does that mean? What does that mean?
Well,
well,
you have to have a differentiation, say, between use and abuse. The urine test doesn't distinguish between use and abuse. It doesn't distinguish between a lot of things like Advil and
marijuana. Well, but I know you're going to bring up the business of the train crash and the people killed, but nonetheless, I still don't want my taxi driver or my train conductor, the engineer, to have used marijuana or alcohol or any other so-called soft drug.
Yes,
if they're making judgments.
I wouldn't either. The problem is this test isn't going to show it. You see, well, if you take an alcohol test, a blood test, for example, breathalyzer, you know that the person's had, let's say, two Jack Daniels or a quart of liquor. I mean, you can get some variation there about frequency of use. The urine test, not even the most accurate, is going to show you frequency of use. It's only going to show presence of a metabolite.
Presence
one
or
of
not.
The, one of the substances contained in the 20 different substances that say marijuana.
Yeah.
So there's going to be never a way to correlate what's found in the urine test with job impairment. Do you see? Without the different
home
levels.
Personal use
you
as
can
opposed
never,
to...
If you wanted to institute industrial psychological tests on air pilots, and who are among the most tested of all the professionals in our country anyway, I have much more faith in pilots, I guess, than you do. I fly 125,000 miles a year, and I give them all a free copy of the book, which shows them how to beat the urine test. So
Are you serious? You don't
absolutely.
Mind... If an impaired person was...
No, you forgot what you made a miss there.
This
test does not show whether you are impaired. In other words, say, let's take marijuana.
I heard exactly what you said.
I don't want to get on a plane with a pilot that smoked 10 joints of marijuana. I don't want to get on a plane with a pilot who's just punched his wife out. I don't want to get on a plane with a pilot whose dog had died or something or is in a bad emotional state.
Right, okay.
But this urine test is not going to show any of those things.
I agree with you.
So it's a bad test. It has a 5% margin of error by the company's own admission. By the Center for Disease Control, you have to add another, the U.S. government, you add another 14%. When you get to the lab level, if you take a Northwestern University test, there's a 25% national error. It isn't just Advil that looks like marijuana to these tests. UCLA has found 65 over-the-counter drugs.
The message
that
here, I'm not challenging the accuracy of what you said at all.
Well, it's
the
just 35 million
someone,
people are
the
getting
the message to tell someone how to beat a test.
Yes.
When they're in charge of flying your airplane doesn't
yes.
sound... sound.
Yes, because I'll tell you why the pilots are being picked on. It's because they want a successful they won a successful collective bargaining strike in 1985, and their industry is among the most that's being right now undergoing acquisitions and mergers, thanks to your friend Texas Air. And so there's probably going to be some accidents with those two. I'm not going to name them. That's a matter of public record.
Abby Hoffman is my guess. I got to do a break.
And it'll get blamed on grass, just like the Amtrak Conrail disaster.
We'll talk about it when we come back. Let me do a break.
And that wasn't true either.
Abby Hoffman, the protester, is doing a sit-in here on the Ed Bush Talk Show. His latest book is called "Steal This Urine Test: Fighting Drug Hysteria in America." We'll do more on the Ed Bush Talk Show.